Good afternoon, Patriot Pals. Thank you for coming back to the Mel Kay Show. I have been very impressed watching my guests today go around the country and really just put out the facts and truth with a fearless and a brave style that isn't as common as we'd hope. And I've been wanting to get him on for a long time. Some of you may know him. For those who don't, this is former law professor David Clements, who is turning out to be an important voice on a lot of fronts. And thank you for joining me today, David.
Thank you, Mel. It's good to be with you.
So good to see you. I heard you speak at our small event in Tulsa, and I had tears in my eyes. And I thought, God, we need more of him. We need way more of him. So for my audience that might not know you yet, can you just briefly tell a little bit about who you are and how you ended up on the front lines of this complete and total American Revolution 2.0?
Well, like many, I think we've all, the past calendar year has just been unexpected. I was teaching classes. I would teach consumer protection law, employment law. And I started seeing some of the machinations of the pandemic, and as were giving us prescriptions for vaccines, these were nameless, faceless agencies. And so part of my brain started looking at the pandemic stuff as a lawyer. And on the other side, I used to be a prosecutor for the better part of a decade. And so I'm very comfortable talking about evidence and how to get evidence in front of a jury. And on November 3rd, I was just struck by how quickly the narrative was established by the media that there's nothing to see here. This is a safe and secure election. And so that was the other part that just, because of my skill set, I'm like, this just isn't true. This is not, this does not comply or comport with anything that I know about the legal system. And so I started documenting a proof analysis for all the different election lawsuits, just out of curiosity. And like many, I started tracking each state to figure out if there was really an evidentiary hearing, because, you know, even though I live in New Mexico, I want to make sure that my vote for the president counts. Right. And so it matters what happens in Pennsylvania. It matters what happens in Texas. And I guess the culmination of it all was January 6th. And this is what really got me, was I saw all those videos where the Capitol Police were removing barriers and inviting people in and taking selfies with folks. And within 2 hours, there was, again, a set narrative where Mitch McConnell is saying, we're not going to look at election fraud issues now. We're going to move on and swear in Joe Biden. And unfortunately, my university jumped on whatever narrative train was out there, and within 24 hours told everyone out there that the people that showed up to the Capitol were insurrectionists, terrorists, et cetera. And so I posted a video in response to that. Knowing that investigations don't work that way. You don't have an answer within 2 hours or 24 hours. And what I posted ended up being a viral video that got me invited onto Tucker Carlson's show. And from that point on, I went from being relatively unknown to anyone to, oh crap, I've said some things on everything that's controversial right now, whether it's critical race theory, the pandemic, the election fraud stuff. And what started off with a platform of like 10 people, just me rambling at night on YouTube until I got banned, right. Turned into one opportunity to meet all kinds of patriots. And I think my chief contribution was to find people that have either worked in the medical freedom front, or patriots that either were lawyers on the lawsuits, like Sidney Powell, Lynn Wood, or people that filled out affidavits. I just wanted to interview them and get their story. And that's what I've been doing for the past year. Now it's the genesis of my journey has turned into how do we get full forensic audits in all 50 states?
Right. Yeah. And you are also a victim, in my opinion, of this cancel culture that is really hurt so many people that were really just trying to give the truth. I've had Tom Renz on recently, and we talk about how a lot of the stuff you're talking about, these like rogue judges and even the Supreme Court, they're not even letting you get to discovery on any of these cases. and you were a law professor, and something happened to you at your university because you chose to step up and give out some facts and discovery of what you were finding out there. What happened at the university?
Yeah, well, there's two major events that affected me. One was I was invited to be a panelist at the Cyber Symposium, and I gave a closing argument. I wanted for people to have a parable of sorts to compare what we were seeing. And what I describe this phenomena as is vote trafficking. I mean, I used to prosecute drug traffickers, and it's all about concealing bad behavior. You've got geographic bad actors, and you've got the cartels.
Right.
And what seems so oddly familiar to me about what occurred November 3rd is that we have geographical county-based criminal actors like the Maricopa Board of Supervisors, and then you have what I call the election cartel.
Yep.
And these are the people that decide who's going to be in power. And so after I did that closing summation, my life got very, very, it just got more heated because I started talking about Perkins Coie. I started talking about Mark Elias and the bad actors that are out there.
Right.
So I had several complaints filed against my law license in New Mexico, seeking to remove my ability to practice as an attorney. And then while this was going on at the university level, they were ramping up these draconian policies where you have to wear the mask again. Okay. You have to take the jab. And if you don't get the jab, you're going to be subject to the flawed PCR test every week. And I said, I've just had it. And I had just been the recipient of a Teaching Excellence Award for the business college. It's the highest honor that someone like myself could receive. And I said, I'm not picking up the award. I'm not doing this, because I had, you know, one of the things that's cool about, you know, meeting folks like yourself, Mel, when we go to these Reawaken America tour events, you can't help but rub elbows with the biggest experts in the game on all things medical freedom.
Right.
And so I was regurgitating the facts, and it was so easy to get a hold of the data saying, like, look, this mass literature is garbage. This vaccine stuff's garbage. And so when I refused, they suspended me immediately. And then I was drugged through the administrative hell that's there, and I was terminated about a month ago. And so that's where I'm at right now. And I feel at peace with the decision. I don't quite know what I'm going to do now. I brand myself as an unemployed traveling audit salesman, and that's what I'm doing.
Yeah, well, you're doing a lot more than that. But see, I really believe that all of us, the Reawakening Tour, which I'm very excited to see you at the one in San Antonio coming up, and I encourage everyone to go, is because we're creating something there. It's an energy. I feel like all of us have, it's not even us. There's more of like a calling. Everyone's playing their part in this, because it's not about America. It's about the world, as you know. And it's about this, what I call the puppet masters, this cabal that have basically hijacked the planet. And for a very long time, like you said, I've really come to the place where I think probably for the past 50 years, since the electronic voting and all of that got instituted everywhere, the whole Republican, Democrat, left, right, has been some kind of a psyop on we the people to make with the illusion that we have choice, where it's been hijacked. And what you're saying, and I wonder your opinion on this, I look at open society, obviously Perkins Coie and Elias and them, but Zuckerberg and his wife, and then also Obama teamed up with LeBron James for their 30,000 army of election volunteers, and all these things that they have these upside down names that sound like, you know, they're up for good. But the more I'm watching, even seeing what happened in New Jersey 2 days ago, they should have an audit in New Jersey immediately before they can hide any of the evidence. But again, it seems to me to be patterns in every state that are connected to this group at the very top that have hijacked our country and stolen it from we the people. And like you said, I don't say Donald Trump had the election stolen from him. I say I did. You did. Yeah. We did. So what do you see on the higher level? Because if we look at it like micro, it's one thing, but it's the macro, that what looks to me like a giant RICO serious case of that is of a massive scale that the media is obviously in on. So how do you see that on the all 50 state front?
I think the biggest obstacle for people that are trying to tell the truth is just being prepared for the psychological implications of just how dark and depressing this battle is, because I suspected and probably have the same position that I did a year ago about how bad things were. But she, because of the fire hose nature of how bad it is, if you were to just unpack it all, the first time you talk to someone, they're like, you're crazy. And so if you look at the evolution of how I've advocated for this, I try to get a read on the American people. I'm like, okay, what can they handle? What can they handle? And at first they couldn't handle much. It's just like, okay, just give them a little bit here, give them another little slice of the red pill. And you just keep doing it. And I'm happy to say that the American people are waking up, and their capacity to deal with bad news is, you know, I'm pleased to see that they're wrestling with just how tough this issue is, because as you mentioned, this isn't just a local issue. This isn't voter fraud. This is systemic election fraud, where you've got bad actors. And terrorist organizations. And this is a nation state level crisis.
Right.
We're talking about national security interest, where all future policies, all laws start with the sanctity of the ballot box. And right now, as you mentioned, the election wasn't just stolen from the president, it was stolen from each of us. So I have a pretty good capacity to see how all the different moving parts are working around. I think a win for the bad guys, a win for Dominion, ESNS, Hart, would be let the Republicans talk about voter ID. Let the Republicans talk about strengthening safeguards for poll watchers and observers, but leave the machines alone.
Right.
Leave the machines alone. And I think the way that you can diagnose whether you're over the target is just look who gets the brunt of the attacks.
Right.
From day one, at least in the electoral lawsuits that were filed, Sidney Powell was the biggest target for the deep state, because she called them out. Right. She absolutely identified the problem that was going on, which is you have a bunch of three-letter agencies that have likely used these machines overseas. We've probably seen regime change, and they're sitting there going, Sidney, you're calling us out. People are starting to see that we're not good and we're part of the government, right? And unfortunately, the case of filing a case under fraud takes a long time. This is not something from a due process standpoint that you're going to get resolution within 2 months and have the right president, because you're accusing people personally of criminal action. And usually those cases take a year and a half before someone can stand trial. So I guess where I'm at right now is that the elections are absolutely stolen through a predetermined use of an algorithm.
Right.
We've seen that through Dr. Douglas Frank's work. We've seen that from mathematical stuff. And even in places like Virginia, where everyone right now is just, you know, patting themselves on the back over Youngkin's victory, people that watch the election know there's no way that he won by a small sliver of 50.4%. He blew out McAuliffe. And we had people that were experts like Draza Smith, who has talked about the use of a PID control, like a cruise control algorithm.
Right.
And she was predicting, like through a live stream, all right, this is the next jump that's going to happen. And she was doing it with mathematical precision. We've got so many experts that are just looking at this going, all right. So I guess to kind of wrap this up in a bow would be, right now, if I'm the deep state, I'm sitting there going, well, how do we use this to our benefit?
Right.
The Republicans got to win. There's nothing to see here. So I hope you guys you'll cool it with that full forensic audit talk. I hope that you'll just stop talking about it, because look, your Republican won. But what was odd about Youngkin was that during his victory speech, he didn't bring up Trump, who came out and supported him. And he didn't bring up the demand for full forensic audits, even though lately he started changing his tune to get the Trump America First voter to come out and vote for him. So we'll be watching him very closely.
Yep.
And if he doesn't want to do the right thing, we'll put him out. We'll put him on the curse campaign and start calling him out.
Right. Well, you see what the media is doing too. They're using it like, oh my God, the Republicans won. And I'm sitting there thinking, oh no, now people are going to be like, oh, they fixed it. No.
It's a rigged election. It was a rigged election.
Of course. We didn't fix 2020 yet. If we don't fix that, they're all going to be rigged.
Yeah. And in some ways I'm more concerned because that to me is a higher sign of intelligence from the enemy. They got greedy with Perdue and Kelly Loeffler in the runoff election. If they would have just split the baby and said, okay, Republicans get one, Democrats, I think the optics of your just garden variety Republicans say, what do you mean the election's rigged? Look, our guys are winning.
Right.
This to me is going to be a test for the American people to really figure out, do you understand that this isn't about left versus right? Do you understand that this is not about Republican, Democrat, that this is one incestuous family. And in some ways, the Republicans are actually far more dangerous because they know how to talk to their audience. Yeah, we'll see what happens, though.
Well, that's why we have to get out and promote the true America First candidates and people involved with the America Project and people that are really for the people, because you and I both know, and I think people that are so focused on Trump don't realize it's the down ballots that are affecting our communities that were cheated. So the fraudulent sheriff, the fraudulent judges, the congressmen, the senators, the city council, the school boards, these were all manipulated as well. And that's really who's affecting us on the local front, as we talk about a lot. And I know General Flynn says a lot, like it's the local action. But I think for the first time, like you said in the beginning, the American people that are awake are starting to realize, like, you can't sit on the sidelines in your local community. I'm in New York City, not right now, thank God, but I am. I call it the communist dystopia, formerly known as New York City. But I will tell you, even with what's going on there, it's full. It does seem, I know it sounds exaggerated, but there's a Nazi Germany feel there. I was a real, when I first started screenwriting, I wrote a screenplay about Eichmann in Jerusalem, that whole situation that happened. And I studied the 30s and what happened and how it evolved. And not only was there a virus involved in it too, but the level of propaganda was so extreme. And now we have technology and the technocracy fully invested and involved. And I know you've talked a lot about propaganda. What can be done? I mean, because I've talked a lot about the Smith-Mundt Act and how, you know, that was supposed to be to protect us. But Obama and his bow, Cass Sunstein and Eric Holder, they went in and they flipped that and said, no, you can use propaganda on the people. And boy, have they. And I think the media thinks they're going to get away with it. What's your thoughts?
Well, good on you for hitting that. Ben Swan was a journalist that actually did a breaking report on the Smith-Mundt Act. But I think it was 2013, the National Defense Authorization Act basically removed the protections that were normally afforded to U.S. taxpaying citizens, which was simply government. You can propagandize foreign nations. If right. you want to make America look good post-World War II and fight communism and have your pamphlets in your commercials and your media, more power to you. But you're not going to use U.S. taxpayer dollars to propagandize your own citizens. And I can't help but think that the cultural zeitgeist of fake news, whatever that is,
right,
that around the time that there was a change in the law with the NDAA of 2013, that we started having a much more difficult time, especially on Facebook.
Right.
Like, what's real? What's fake? What's propaganda? And then I think 2016, when Trump won, it was kicked into high gear and you started seeing it in very subtle ways. Like I remember watching like an SVU, you know, Special Victims Unit thing. And just on a park bench in New York, there was like an advertisement for the Obamacare, like signing up.
Right.
Like getting it.
Right.
And that wouldn't have been something that you would have seen in an episode 2 years prior. Yet it was there as part of the setting. And that's the subconscious kind of propaganda. That's when propaganda works at its best. It's subconscious, it's subliminal. So I think the way that you fight it is, one, you have to cut the feed. Right now, we're not losing this battle because we're not right on the facts or on the ideas. And I don't even think we're losing this battle. I think we've been fighting it with both arms tied behind our back. You know, and a good friend of mine really articulated this well. Information takes three forms. You've got substance, content, and distribution. And conservatives are consumed with spending 99% of our time dealing with substance. And we are usually substantively right. The problem is we'll argue and spend all of our time and prioritize on whether we think this issue is number one versus number two on the list or number three. But the reality is we all kind of agree on what's right and what's wrong. And what we suck at is content. Like, how do we stylize that substance? How do we roll it out in a documentary? Do we put it in a poem or a song, right, or a movie? And then distribution's non-existent because, right, you know, you try, yeah, to go on YouTube and you get canceled or, right. And so I think we've got to learn how to cut the feed to the Marxist communist platforms and try to circumvent that platform suppression. And I think that the movers and shakers like yourself and everyone else that's in this movement that we call influencers have effectively figured out through guerrilla warfare. Okay, I can't survive on Facebook. I put up a video, it gets taken down. I'm not on YouTube or I'm not on Twitter. And so we have become experts. And we're kind of cobbling things together and we're hoping cumulatively that our reach will red pill enough to the people. And I think the latest development, the game changer that I'm hoping that it will be Truth Social, because there's only one person in the world that can say, okay, conservatives, I'm here.
Right.
And everyone will go, I'm going there, because I know that's good, because everyone else is going to go there. Right. And if the architecture of Truth Social is comparable to Facebook,
right,
yet has containment where we don't have communist parts, communist chips and VPNs or communist ties to servers like Amazon Web Servers,
right,
then I think for the first time in a really long time, conservatives will feel like, I've got a home. I've got a sanctuary. I don't have to worry. Like, I'm running, shooting over my shoulder. I can take a deep breath and I can just get the word out to conservatives. So that day can't come soon enough. But until then, I think the survival of the propaganda wars is circumvention of platform suppression and just hang on as long as you can.
Right. Yeah. What's very strange with me is I got kicked off of YouTube for talking a little too much about child trafficking, I guess, because one day I woke up and I was gone and I really had on a really good guy that was talking about what is actually the largest human trafficking operation we've ever seen in real time happening on our border with this installed regime in cahoots with the cartel, and how sickening it was, and these children disappearing. I know you've heard Tom Homan speak. He says 45,000 is a small number of children that have come through that border, never to be seen again and not tracked. And we know that you've been around, you've dealt with trafficking as a lawyer and a prosecutor, you know how bad it is. Apparently YouTube doesn't like anyone talking about it. And I woke up to a terminated channel, 100,000 subscribers overnight. I'm not a tech person, obviously. So I didn't back up anything. So we're talking about 75 probably videos. The crazy part is that there are many fake Mel K Show channels still on YouTube putting out my same content. I've complained a million times. I'm involved in the Trump lawsuit at this point, but they're doing that. And I'm thinking, what is going on here? It doesn't make any sense. But like you said, I had to decide, a lot of people didn't, to not appeal, to not fight YouTube. I just said, okay, well, it's going to stink to start over, but I'm going to have to start over at Rumble and then BitChute and Frank's Speech and wherever things go, you just got to keep going. But I think this is ruining their plans, because every one of us that pops up somewhere else, they're like, oh, they're out there again, you know? And it kind of makes me laugh.
To your credit, Mel, there's a passion. I don't think you would be able to not get into the grind and just not keep working at it. And so it's a testament to a labor and a mentality of, we're not going to be stopped. Like, you know, when none of us had any I think, thought that I'm going to have 100,000 followers on YouTube and everything else. It's really surreal and it's humbling that whatever it is that you're doing, you've gotten people's attention. And so you've had to build and rebuild.
Yeah.
And a lot of us are kind of ready for, you know, I'm on Telegram. That's probably my largest audience.
Right.
But there's days where I'm going, is this going to be compromised? Cause I like to think about what are the bad guys doing?
Right.
And I can't help but think that the bad guys have probably made super sweet offers to the CEOs of these companies because that's where we're seeing some efficacy in fighting this battle, this information war.
Yeah.
We'll see how long we last. I think it's just a matter of keep working.
Yeah, but they can't stop us. Anyway, I think on the other side, people like you and some of the other people we go, like Patrick Byrne and General Flynn, Lindell, all these people will realize and recognize the real heroes in this battle and how horrible it was. Speaking of, you were an amazing, not only attorney, professor, prosecutor, but this lawfare that's going on. First, you know, with General Flynn, I was with Roger Stone last week, what they've done to this man and his family and his finances, his reputation, Carter Page. But even worse, what is going on in D.C. right now with our political prisoners in this gulag, basically, with no rights, totally ignoring. D.C. is a vassal state. They seem to be totally rogue. They don't like the Constitution. They don't like the Bill of Rights. They appear to me to not like God or humans, humanity. But you've been fighting quite a bit to bring attention to what's really going on in D.C. with these people that are being held for, honestly, wrongthink. And I wanted to talk a little bit about that and about these judges, because there's a real problem with these judges that Judge Sullivan that persecuted and still would like to, General Flynn, Berman Jackson with Roger Stone, but now all these judges that are hearing these cases in D.C. for these, in my opinion, people that were set up and trapped by the FBI and rogue people, these judges, what they're saying about them are lies, but they're taking their judge platform and demonizing people that have been tortured, literally tortured and held without their rights. What do you make of what's going on in D.C. and when these people need to be held accountable? Judges that are using the law to persecute political prisoners should be held to a higher standard. And therefore I think held the justice that should come to them should be far worse. What are your thoughts on what's going on in DC?
Yeah. Of all the things that have been depressing and shocking and disgusting, January 6th and the treatment of our political prisoners is number one for me, because these were the original election audit pioneers. These were the people that said, I know that what happened on the 3rd was wrong. I'm going to show up and I'm going to express my voice. And there was the urgency of the American Patriot from day one. That's who those folks were. Those were the biggest, best, most fearless patriots, because they just used their common sense saying, I went to bed. I know for a fact that President Trump is the president, and yet the communists have done something. So the first few points that I would highlight on why I'm disgusted by it. One is, you've got video evidence that is out there that shows that you cannot satisfy charges for criminal trespass when you're given permission to come in. That's number one. Number two, there's 14,000 hours of surveillance footage that has not been produced to the accused. And that's mandatory under Supreme Court cases, Brady versus Maryland. Anything that tends to prove that someone is innocent, you have to turn that over. And you have to turn it over because there are other witnesses that will be identified in that video. And we all have a right to confront our accusers. So there's a violation of the Confrontation Clause. There's a violation of Brady versus Maryland. And there's rampant prosecutorial misconduct on behalf of the attorneys, because they're charging people knowing this. Now, the narrative that came out of the 6th, primarily they used the word insurrection. This was an insurrection, yet not one of the January 6th protesters have been charged with insurrection.
Right.
The vast majority of the charges have been misdemeanor offenses. And when you start looking at the amount of time that someone could be incarcerated, usually what distinguishes a misdemeanor from a felony is the potential incarceration. Felonies, it's a year or more. Misdemeanors, it's a year or less. And in some respects, you can sentence people sequentially, or you can have a consecutive sentencing. So a lot of these folks have two charges that they're usually dealing with. But what's sick about that is you've got 50, 60 of these prisoners that have already served through time served the vast majority of a sentence that they haven't gone to trial on, and they're not being released on bond. And so for someone who has tried his best to keep really violent, nasty, murdering thugs behind bars, I've had those tense moments, bond hearings with the judge saying, look, what you're looking at is flight risk. Are they going to show up? Do they have a criminal history that shows violence? And the vast majority of the hundreds of people that were arrested and processed, they weren't flight risk, many of which turned themselves in. Right. Jake and Jelly, for example, turned himself in. He's a pacifist. And they don't have criminal records showing violence. And so I've never seen anything like it. And the last thing that I'll say that's really, really disgusting is that people are using the leverage of folks that have been in jail in a cage for 23 hours a day to procure a plea deal through duress and coercion. So they'll just get sentenced. They just want to get out of jail. And so they're pleading to charges that they shouldn't be pleading to. And it's hard to tell them that you shouldn't if you've been in a cage since January.
Right.
So the numbers of issues that are just so unjust, I've never seen anything like it. It's right out of the Gulag Archipelago, except for it's America.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So those would be my comments. I hope that there will be an accounting. There are prosecutors that need to be disbarred, and there are judges that need to be removed from the bench based on black letter law. This is nothing controversial about what I'm saying. I would have had complaints filed against me as a prosecutor if I went forward on any of these cases in the jurisdiction that I worked in. But for whatever reason, there's like this demonic spell. It's just demonic.
Yeah.
Where in bizarro world in DC, no one's following these maxims of law that are well established.
Yeah, well, I honestly think right now, like we talk about, this is international. The whole the vote rigging, the color revolutions, it's all the same people at the top. It's always been. And I think people are waking up all over the world to it. But the bottom line is we are still seeing people really suffering both at the border. They are not unaccompanied minors. They are trafficked children. And then in DC, these are not people that are in jail. They're political prisoners. And it's really scary when it's Vladimir Putin just calling out that America has political prisoners held wrongfully against the US Constitution in DC. They have no business judging any other country. And yet this is what's happening. And, you know, this just came out yesterday that Kyle Rittenhouse, I think all of us watched that thing go down, a 17-year-old that had illegal carry and was out there trying to protect businesses during the peaceful protests of Antifa and Black Lives Matter a summer ago. And the FBI sat on footage, let this 17-year-old kid get charged with murder. He was in jail for 6 months. He's been on house arrest since. They have footage that they had to show yesterday that showed not only him being chased and beaten with a skateboard by the two guys, but the guy took out a gun to shoot him and he protected his life. And this kid spent a year being demonized by the media, but also the FBI knew the whole time he was innocent.
Yeah. Not only that, the prosecutor couldn't help but mention his opening statement that this was a riot, that it was a riot. I mean, so like, okay, if it's a peaceful protest, then the optics change. But the prosecutor was lying several times. There's some things that were just factually untrue. So you just hope that the fact finders are wise enough to see what was going on. And I want to say that there was a videographer that had some ties with Lynn Wood in capturing all of the different angles early on. And that video was leaked early on for people to go, wait a minute. Kyle Rittenhouse exercised such discipline. I mean, he really was textbook at every level about rendering aid, the reason why he was there, when he raised his firearm, when it was down. That's his actions were justified. Again, it's another one of those political cases that as a prosecutor, I wouldn't try the case.
But
you're just looking at these prosecutors. And I think that there's been some information that's showing that the prosecutor in the case and the lead detective happen to have a familial relationship with the mayor of Kenosha. And so there's a political, there's an ideological possession of the family that's related to the mayor, where they were fine with having the riots or the peaceful protest, and they're fine with deploying political assets to go after people that believe in private property rights.
Right. Minneapolis too, Chicago. But a lot of these go really to the financing behind these people, the mayors, the judges, the sheriffs, all often lead to the Open Society of George Soros, who I cannot believe is still free to wreak havoc all over the world, because it hasn't been just our country. He has NGOs all over the world that have pulled the same thing they pulled in America, this color revolution, turning people against each other. It's factual that he has given money to Black Lives Matter, to defund the police, to LGBTQ, trans, all of it. Anything that's going to divide America, you can trace it to one of George Soros's NGOs giving them the money. But a lot of these judges, sheriffs, the sheriff in Maricopa County is a Soros judge. Sheriff, the one prosecutor with a Smollett case in Chicago that's not putting anyone away, Soros back. All of these, Bodine, whose parents were the Weather Underground, a lot can be traced to them that's going on right now. Not only did they get away with it, but they ended up hijacking all of the Ivy League schools. You know, a lot of this are the same group of people that just keep playing this over and over. I think a lot of people, I did a show about it. Of course, it disappeared with my channel. But, you know, if we go back a year before the election and we look at this Transition Integrity Project with this Eisen guy, and of course, Elias was involved, Podesta, all these people, they set up, Trump was not going to win no matter what. If you look at what they did, the simulation and all of that. You know, and it's just, I knew a year before that what their plan was and that they were going to hijack the country, and they didn't care who knew about it. At this point, it seems to me DC's like, hey, people of the United States, we don't care. What are you going to do about it? So in terms of all of this, what do you see justice in any of these realms, any signs of, you know, we all talk about white hats and all of that, but we also talk about that it's we, the people, but a lot of these crimes, there can't be all bad guys in the FBI. There can't be all bad guys in the DOJ. Or are we that far from what this country was intended to be and what our founders intended, which was a country by the people, for the people, that, yeah, maybe all these agencies got to go. Maybe they're all too corrupt to fix.
Yeah, it's difficult because this is not the America that I grew up believing in. When you find out that your country is the Empire in Star Wars, you're not the rebellion. We're not Luke Skywalker and Han Solo. We are Vader.
Right.
I mean, that's the DOJ, right? That's the FBI.
CIA. Yeah.
And so we have a historical framework for atrocities of this level, but the bad guys were the Nazis. And so we can think of Nuremberg trial type penalties for crimes against humanity. And what we're talking about, for the most part, are crimes against humanity, whether it's the trafficking element, whether it's the medical tyranny. The uncomfortable thing that we're going to have to wrap our mind around is that it's not the Nazis alone. It's not going to be the Germans. It's a globalist cabal. But guess what? There's such massive infiltration of our American systems that we're going to be looking at politicians and judges and American medical doctors that really need to be shot. And I mean this in accordance with the legal penalties ascribed to treason, the crime of treason.
Right.
So what I can tell you is that the desire for justice is real. It's what I'm consuming. I'm not a social person. I'm on social media by virtue of just my anger and wanting to get the bad guy. I don't want to be a podcaster. I don't want people. I mean, I want to disappear. Like my dream, people like, Dave, what do you want to do? Like, I want to go away. I don't want anyone here to know who I am.
I know.
I hate this.
Yeah.
But what we've seen is such a failure at the, in the court of law that we, the people that are smart enough say, we have to take this to the court of public opinion. And it's got to be a we the people solution to where we have a critical mass moment where our politicians, our judges go, oh, shit.
Right.
We're not wearing any clothes and they know it.
Right.
And when that moment happens, and I think we're getting there, that's why the Rasmussen poll of 58% of the American people not having trust in November 2020 is so important, that 84% of Republicans don't believe that Biden's legitimate, that 34% of Democrats don't believe that he won legitimately, that we're moving the needle in spite of the fact that there are so many gatekeepers, so many bottlenecks. You know, you mentioned the Open Society in George Soros. I mean, think about this. They have game planned all of these bottlenecks in strategic counties across the country to ensure that a sheriff will not investigate fraud.
Right.
And that an attorney general will be weaponized against Matt DiPerno or Sidney Powell right. in Michigan. And they thought this through. And what was almost comedic, because I remember like 5-6 years ago, George Soros was blamed for everything. He was like the proverbial boogeyman. I used to laugh like, no one's that bad.
Oh, yeah.
No, he is. He is that bad. When you start tracing and following the money on campaign expenditures, he's everywhere. He's in New Mexico.
Yeah.
Raul Torres, who's a district attorney in the largest county in my state, was funded by George Soros. I can prove that without a doubt. And wouldn't you know, some of the massive cyber attacks that happened in New Mexico were in his county. And so if you wanted to file a complaint, even if you had a good sheriff, the district attorney would basically say, look at the complaint, right. like they wouldn't pursue it because why? He's bought and paid for.
Right.
So I think my optimism, if there's any, is born of my faith. I think that to get very, very nuts and bolts, simple about the approach, I don't care about whether I think we're going to win or not. I know that I've got a law that I'm supposed to follow, and there's certain rules like thou shalt not lie.
Right.
Thou shalt not steal. Thou shalt not kill. I want to live and speak truth in an environment that says, you know something? You stole my vote.
Right.
I'm going to fight you on it.
Right.
Now you're lying about stealing my vote. I'm going to fight you on it. And this is just a matter of kind of setting our jaws and just digging in saying, okay, I don't know, but I know that if I bemoan my station, that self-fulfilling prophecy of nothing happening will occur because right. inaction is going to just breed that. So I think this is just a matter of us getting pissed off collectively. And I think it's working. It would just be nice to have some, you know, a little bit more from John Durham, for instance.
I know.
Can we get more than just Sussman as an indictment? Can we get more? Because I think we're desperate for that. I think right now, a lot of us that have been doing this for a long time are experiencing battle fatigue.
Yep.
I want to get off this treadmill, but part of me is like, Dave, that's weakness.
Yeah.
Shove it aside. But I'll tell you this, Mel, when, not if, but when we have justice in this country, I'll be the first one to run out of my house. I don't care if I'm in my tidy whities, yelling, right. just shouting, going, you know, yeah. and I pray for that day. I pray for that day. So we work for it. And I think right. it's going to come. It's just a matter of sitting through this story. This is like a bad movie.
I know.
And we like watching movies. We don't like being in them. I want to get out of this movie.
That's what I've been saying. I spent 15 years in Hollywood and all I wanted to do is make movies. And now I'm like, I want out of this movie now. It is killing me. I hate it. But nobody could make this up. All the twists and turns. It's like one thing pops up, another one does. I still happen to think that the Epstein case is still out there on many fronts. He can be connected to many, many people. They're sitting on that evidence. They have 10,000 hours of blackmail and video and stuff they've seized from all his properties. He was the biggest blackmailer on the planet for the Mossad, CIA, and the former Saudi prince. Can you?
Yes.
What are they? Who's sitting on that? I feel like we, the people, have to just demand that we see this evidence. It's our money. It's our kind of because they steal our taxpayer dollars. Where's the evidence?
There was a lot of curiosity out there for a while with the passing of John McAfee, whether or not the dead man switch, if all of the Epstein evidence was there. And I've seen bits and pieces of a video that has materialized on BitChute and these other places. And there's a suggestion. I'm not technologically savvy enough to say, yes, it's from it. But some of the images and stuff that have come out are so disgusting. They're so dark. They're so gruesome that there's a level of credibility to that being the case. Maybe there's a slow leak happening, but
yeah, there's a lot of it. It's out there. It just all got wiped. I was, that's really how I started this because my parents live in Palm Beach and I knew a lot about the first case, you know, that whole deal that he got away. He was charged
deal,
with,
yeah.
He was charged with sex with an underage prostitute. There's no such thing as an underage prostitute. And it was Robert Mueller and Acosta. Then Trump put Acosta in the Labor Department. I don't know. I know that that's going to come back to haunt a lot of people. I saw Prince Andrew gave his response to the Southern District of New York's lawsuit. And he basically admitted in it that he knows Epstein was running a sex trafficking ring with minors. So people are starting to flip in that realm. We see Fauci falling apart every day and all of his crimes all the way back to the AIDS massacre, genocide coming through. I just see a lot of pieces. Also, I see geopolitically people waking up. People are now looking at the UN, at this thing in Glasgow. All that they're saying is not what it seems. Like you said, they're naked and we see them. And like Trump said, there was an invisible empire, an invisible enemy that has all the money, all the power. They have their own military. And the people don't know who they are. And I think people like you and me and the people we tour with have been pointing at them. And, you know, we see Klaus Schwab and all these people at this thing telling us exactly what they're going to do. And people are starting to wake up. The whole transhumanism thing with the metaverse. I mean, people are starting to wake up. If it's not one thing, it's another. So thank you so much, David. You are a real hero. I'm looking forward to seeing you in San Antonio. I encourage anyone to come join us because there is a palpable feeling there that not only are we the majority, but we are winning, but also it renews your faith. A lot of people like us have been marginalized, lost friends, family, attacked. And then you go to that environment and it's all about God and love and love of country and love of our founding fathers and our constitution. It's really worth getting to any of these events if you can. There's a lot of power and energy at them. And I will see you there, David, and keep up the good fight because your voice matters on so many levels. And I believe you will get your 50 state audit, but we got to keep fighting. And I really appreciate you and your work.
Amen, Mel. Thank you for having me. And it's been a pleasure to finally get to speak with you.
Thank you so much. I look forward to seeing you again soon. And take care of yourself. We need you in the game.
All right. We will. Take care. God bless.
You too.